From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. As members of Congress push for a resolution to formally recognize the Armenian Genocide of 1915, Turkish leaders warn that if it passes, relations with the United States, especially military relations, will go downhill fast. Turkey is a major hub for supplying U.S. troops in Iraq and Afghanistan. Now, the head of Turkey's armed forces is warning that military relations with the U.S. will never be the same if the House goes forward, and Turkey's parliament is poised to greenlight a Turkish military strike into northern Iraq. Is Turkey bluffing? Does it matter if high principle is at stake? This hour, On Point, we're talking about what a falling out with Turkey could really look like in the wake of an Armenian genocide resolution. You can join the conversation. How do you weigh principle and logistics here? History and strategy. Can the United States make a statement and make war without Turkey? We're at 800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Joining me first today from Istanbul in Turkey is Scott Peterson, correspondent for the Christian Science Monitor. Scott, great to have you with us. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Could you first take us to the heart of this issue? Why is Turkey, why are Turks so upset when it comes to the Armenian genocide resolution before the House now?
Well, I think the most important point that Turks raise is that this was an event that took place 90 years ago, nearly a century ago. They think it's old history, of course. They take it and see this as a personal slight, even though it was conducted by Ottoman Turks before the formation of modern Turkey by Mustafa Kemal Atatürk. But they, you know, this is one of the red button issues in Turkey. There really are two. One of them is this issue of what happened to the Armenians and was it a genocide in 1915 and the years afterwards during World War One. And also the other one is how Turkey has dealt with its ethnic Kurds down in the southeast. And these two issues really have combined in these recent weeks to form kind of a perfect storm. The United States, remarkably, is right in the middle of it.
We're going to look at that storm, but Scott, I want to circle back here once more on the first red button issue. I mean, we'll look at the Turkish threat to actually send troops into the Kurdish area of northern Iraq. But on the Armenian genocide, I mean, it is a century ago. They say it wasn't even their government, their republic. It was the Ottoman Empire. So explain again, if you can, why is this such a hot button? Germany has dealt with its history. Other countries have. Do Turks really believe it simply didn't happen? Or is there some other dynamic that is not fully visible, perhaps from the United States?
Well, Turks don't believe that Armenians were not killed during that period. But the way that they cast it and the way that they are taught it is that there were also Turks who were killed, that this was not a systematic effort by the Ottoman Turks to destroy the entire Armenian race and ethnicity. And so they don't think that that constitutes a genocide in their book. And so, you know, what they see is an attack against their history, a history that they feel that they need to work out for themselves with the Armenians. But of course, this is an issue where it's, you know, legally speaking, it's very, very difficult to make any headway on this issue in Turkey because it is literally illegal to, in some cases, to even talk about whether a genocide happened or the fact that a mass killing took place in those days because it is deemed to be insulting Turkishness.
Which and even very prominent Turks have been punished for this, including their own Nobel laureate Orhan Pamuk with this insulting Turkishness charge.
That is exactly right. And those are some of the changes and reforms that are currently being examined right now. But you're right. And that is one of the things that has gotten in the way of Turkey doing a thorough examination itself of not only its own archive, but also that portion of its history in the way that the Germans have examined the Holocaust and accepted that it was part of their history. The Turks have yet to come to reach that point regarding the Armenians.
So there's one hot button. The other big hot red button, as you say, the Kurds, both inside Turkey and what's going on in the Kurdish area of northern Iraq. Turkey's parliament being asked to greenlight a Turkish incursion, invasion. I'm not sure what the right word is. We read that 20,000 or more Turkish troops are on that border. Why is Turkey so upset about what's going on with the Kurds and the Kurdish area of northern Iraq?
Well, what's been going on, and it's been going on now for the last several months, especially starting in earlier this year, but we've had in the last 2.5 weeks, there have been about 30 deaths of 30 Turkish soldiers and also Turkish civilians at the hands of PKK militants. These are Kurdish separatists who are based. There are about 3,000 of them estimated to be based in northern Iraq. They have safe haven there. They are have safe haven in an area that is controlled by Iraqi Kurds, who, of course, very close American allies, and also their American forces in northern Iraq. Turkey does not believe that the United States or those Iraqi Kurdish forces have done enough to prevent these PKK militants from making strikes against Turkey across the border, and so now they feel that they have no choice but to take take moves into their own hands, and that's why Parliament this week is going to be approving giving authority to the military to cross that border when and if the military sees fit to do that.
President Bush talks about a global war on terror. Turkish leaders talk about the Kurdish threat as a terrorist threat, Scott.
Well, I mean, you know, the United States and the European Union also consider the PKK to be a terrorist organization. There's also no doubt about that. They have very often struck at civilian targets, not just military ones. And, of course, you know, the way the Turks see it is that this is purely a terrorist organization, regardless of who they've been targeting. You know, and the word terrorism is, of course, is printed all over the nationalist Turkish press all the time. And really, I mean, that press has helped to, you know, really engender more and more public anger and wishes for revenge. And so there really is a very strong popular will to do something and strike out across the border. Although, you know, since the late 1980s, we have seen 24 cross-border incursions, some of them extremely large, with up to 50,000 troops, and they have none of them have actually dislodged the PKK. So the military is aware of this, and I think that they're now fairly cautious as well.
Scott, the stakes are high for everyone here. What is the sense there in Istanbul? I mean, Turkey's head of armed forces is talking about a real deep falling out with the United States and its military relations here. Is Turkey bluffing, or can Turkey afford to take severe countermeasures against American military access and logistics and maybe more if this resolution goes through in Congress?
I don't think that Turkey is bluffing. I mean, it's an indication about how personally, if you will, you know, the Turkish nation takes this issue of the Armenian, you know, the Armenian genocide bill. And, you know, I don't think they're bluffing in the sense that back in 2003, you'll remember that the initial sourness that crept in a very big way between the United States and Turkey, which, of course, are NATO allies. I mean, Turkey is the eastern anchor of NATO. It has the second largest ground forces after the United States in the NATO alliance. And, you know, but still, Turkey refused to allow the United States to use its territory as one of the launch pads against Iraq just prior to the 2003 invasion. And that has engendered a degree of suspicion on both sides that really has yet to overcome and, in fact, gets worse in a lot of ways.
But I guess it gives some credibility to their threat. Scott Peterson in Istanbul with the Christian Science Monitor. Always good to hear from you. Thank you for joining us, Scott.
Thank you.
We'll be joined later in this hour by a congressman who thinks the genocide resolution is a must come what may. But first, joining us now from New York is Stephen Cook, a fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations. He's an expert on Turkish politics and U.S. Middle East policy, author of Ruling But Not Governing, The Military and Political Development in Egypt, Algeria, and Turkey. Stephen Cook, thank you very much for being with us.
It's my pleasure, Tom.
What do we have on the boiler here? What is at stake first for the United States in this standoff with Turkey?
Well, I think that U.S.-Turkish relations have moved from bad to worse or bad to ugly in this situation. We've got, as Scott Peterson suggested, a perfect storm of issues. We have the Armenian Genocide Resolution making its way through the House of Representatives at the same time that Turkey is under attack from PKK terrorists. Public pressure has been building for some time for the Turkish military and for the government to authorize an incursion to take care of the PKK. The Armenian Genocide Resolution complicates U.S. efforts to dissuade the Turks from taking this action because, quite obviously, the United States would not like to see an invasion that potentially destabilizes the one relatively stable part of Iraq. But with the recriminations on both sides in Ankara and Washington, I'm afraid that the basis for communications between the two governments have been severely compromised.
Can the United States continue its military operations in Iraq and Afghanistan? And we'll look at the details, but broad stroke, can it be done without transit through Turkey, without cargo and gasoline and food and everything else that goes through Turkey?
Well, it's a startling statistic that 74% of American air cargo transits through Turkey on the way to Iraq and support of the operations in Afghanistan. It's certainly possible. I believe the U.S. military can probably overcome almost anything, but it will make it extremely difficult to continue to resupply our troops in Iraq and Afghanistan without the use of Incirlik Air Base in Turkey as well as the use of Turkish airspace. It will cost money and time and potentially lives if that resupply is compromised.
Stephen Cook, we're going to come back and look at a lot of the details of this very, very tricky situation. Stephen Cook is with the Council on Foreign Relations with us from New York. When we come back, we go to the region again, and we'll hear from you. You can join the conversation. What do you think? Can we pursue the Iraq war without Turkey, and at what cost? Soldiers, airmen, have you flown into Iraq through Incirlik Air Base? What are your options if the path through Turkey goes away? And what does it mean if the U.S. should lose its key forward base between Europe and the Middle East? Does it matter? Is principle more important here, or are the Turks bluffing? 800-423-8255 is our number. 800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the nitty-gritty of an American fallout with Turkey. If it comes over the Armenian genocide resolution, the potential military and strategic consequences of a broken relationship. You can join the conversation in this hour. Can the United States afford to lose Turkey? Can Turkey afford to lose the United States? Armenian Americans, do you have any second thoughts about the damage that might be done here? Or is it just worth it, just necessary? And Turks, Turkish Americans, how did this relationship get on such a bad path even before the genocide resolution? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Lots of talk about this in Washington on ABC's This Week. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi of California talked about critics who say the timing isn't right for Congress to declare that the mass killings of Armenians during World War I was genocide.
When I came to Congress 20 years ago, it wasn't the right time because of the Soviet Union. Then that fell, and then it wasn't the right time because of the Gulf War I, and then it wasn't the right time because of overflights of Iraq, and now it's not the right time because of Gulf War II.
And on ABC's This Week, Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell of Kentucky said it's not a good time to pass a resolution calling the killings of more than a million Armenians by the Ottoman Turks genocide.
I don't think the Congress passing this resolution is a good idea at any point, but particularly not a good idea when Turkey is cooperating with us in many ways, which ensures greater safety for our soldiers.
Here's reaction on the streets of Ankara, Turkey's capital, to the moves in Washington last week.
We don't accept this genocide. It's very clear for us. We never accept. We never accept.
I'm strongly against this, and it will disrupt, really, the U.S. and Turkish relationships. Hopefully they will understand that there is no genocide, and it will be left to historians to relieve the truth.
Well, maybe left to historians, maybe not. It's on the docket right now, and there are very, very deep feelings about this on all sides. Armenians, who lost so many nearly a century ago, say it's high time. At the same time, the U.S. is involved in big operations, a lot of which work out of Turkey. Stephen Cook has joined us. He's with us from the Council on Foreign Relations, an expert on Turkish politics and U.S. Middle East relations. We're joined as well right now from Tbilisi, Georgia, not so far down the pike from Turkey, by Stephen Larrabee. He is Distinguished Chair in European Security at the RAND Corporation, a nonprofit institution, an expert on Turkey. Stephen Larrabee, thank you very much for being with us.
Hello, Tom.
Mr. Larrabee, can you describe for us in some more detail the ways in which Turkey serves as a forward base for U.S. military operations in Iraq and Afghanistan?
Well, yes, some 65% to 70% of all the men and materiel that go to Iraq, for instance, pass through Turkey, and a lot of the oil and other fuel also passes through Turkey to Iraq, and the base in Incirlik in Turkey also serves as a hub for a lot of the material that goes and flights that go to Afghanistan.
So a lot of supply action. What about direct war fighting? I'm reading here that U.S. tankers operating out of Incirlik, and this is the big base near the Mediterranean, near the corner of Turkey and Syria there, have flown 3,400 sorties and delivered 35 million gallons of fuel to U.S. fighter and transport aircraft on missions in Iraq and Afghanistan. This is not just supply. This is, in some part, actual war fighting.
Well, I mean, I said men and materiel. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I don't know how you want to define war fighting, but I can't verify those exact figures, but they sound to me about to be correct.
Why is Turkey so important here if we've got Kuwait and the big, you know, access by sea through the ports of Kuwait and then north into Iraq? Why doesn't that cut it? Why isn't that enough?
Well, it's a question of the distances and the time it would take. In other words, yes, it would be possible to do many of these things from Kuwait and other bases probably, but it would be more difficult and it would take longer. The most efficient way is to do it through the base in Incirlik in Turkey.
Stephen Cook, the land path here from Turkey into Iraq is something called, is it Habur Gate, way out in eastern Turkey on the Iraqi border, or what is now sort of Kurdistan. Also a lot of land traffic in support of the war and Iraq through that transit point, Stephen.
That's correct. Endless truck traffic going from Turkey into Iraq. Many of the truckers, the Turkish truckers who've been transporting material to U.S. forces and U.S. bases in Iraq have been targeted by the Iraqi insurgency as well. So, again, it's not just the air and land it's not just the air and the resupply and logistics, but, of course, a significant amount of stuff is going over land into Iraq from Turkey as well. But it's actually a broader issue about Turkey. It's not just about Iraq. If you take a look at Turkey, it sits at the geographic center of many of the most important foreign policy hotspots for the United States. Mm. Just draw lines out from Ankara to the Middle East, to Central Asia, to the Caucasus, to the Balkans, to the Mediterranean. All of these places are of considerable U.S. concern, places where the United States is active diplomatically and militarily. And to lose Turkey, not just in Iraq, but in these parts of it, would be a blow to U.S. foreign policy.
Stephen Larrabee, do you think, I'm not even sure what that actually means, but to lose Turkey, could that really happen? How far could this relationship fall if Turkey says enough is enough?
Well, I think it could fall very far, and the relationship could deteriorate quite badly. The Turks take the genocide resolution very, very seriously, and it comes in the broader context of the fact that the Kurdistan Workers' Party, the PKK, mm-hmm. has been launching attacks from northern Iraq against Turkey. This is one that, for them, the litmus test of the value of the U.S.-Turkish security partnership. And the United States has not taken, in my view, the Turkish concern seriously. We wouldn't allow a terrorist organization based in Mexico to come across the Mexican-U.S. Border and make attacks, and that's exactly where the Turks feel. They feel that this is a clear case of terrorism, where the United States and the Europeans have branded the PKK as a terrorist organization, but the United States has not really been willing to do very much to help the Turks to try to eliminate this terrorist threat.
Stephen Cook, doesn't Turkey need the United States as well? Doesn't the United States, superpower, have the standing to say, Look, there's a blot on history here that we need to acknowledge, and we need to work with you. You need to work with us. Doesn't the U.S. have that leverage?
Well, certainly in a perfect world, that would be the case. And I think it's important for the Turks to confront their history and open up the Ottoman archives and confront this issue of the Armenian genocide. At the same time, the relationship between the United States and Turkey has been so damaged as a result of the Iraq War. The Turks were very clear about what their concerns were in the run-up to the Iraq War, that an invasion of Iraq would necessarily damage their national security. And their concerns have come to pass. And as a result, the United States has little moral suasion with the authorities in Ankara to prevent them from taking action against the PKK. After all, the Turks say that the PKK is their al-Qaeda. And what happened to you're either with us or you're against us? They are chafing, disappointed and angry that the United States has not taken action against the PKK. Of course, from Washington's perspective, there's a number of political constraints that precludes the United States from taking action against the PKK, primarily the desire not to destabilize northern Iraq.
Stephen Larrabee, Stephen Cook points out that the Turks have gone into northern Iraq many times in recent years. If they go in again now, when so many U.S. troops are there, when there's an Iraq war going on, what could the fallout be? Could it really be destabilizing? I mean, the Kurdish area in the north has been one of the most peaceful and prosperous areas. Is it really at risk, stability there or beyond, if Turkish forces go into Iraq, into Kurdistan?
Well, I think it is. It's a very dangerous situation because, the Iraqi, leaving aside the Iraqi Kurds, you are legally violating a border of Iraq, and so there will be there's likely to bring in the Iraqi forces, not just the Iraqi Kurdish forces, the Peshmerga. So there's a chance that, you could have a full-scale war with Iraq itself. So it's quite a dangerous situation.
It's kind of a mind-blowing possibility. Let's begin to turn to our listeners. Many want to join us. Stephen is calling from Holden, Massachusetts. Stephen, you're on the air.
Hi, good morning.
Hi.
I am a descendant of an Armenian family. I am very concerned that the American government is so quick to turn, the other way about the Armenian genocide. Aren't we in the Middle East because of a ruthless dictator, Saddam Hussein, who killed an X amount of people in his own country? What about the Armenian genocide, where a million Armenians died? This was a true genocide. This wasn't a massacre. They used the wireless. They used railroad transportation. This wasn't a massacre in a village or a town. A whole generation of people were annihilated from the face of the earth.
Mm.
And isn't it time that, we take the high road? This is America. We're Americans. This is a country that was based on truth and understanding. And I think to turn the other way right now is a cornerstone. The French are so strong, they're admitting that they will not let Turkey into the European Union because they will not admit to the fact of the Armenian genocide. Why is France ahead of America?
Right. If France can do it, why not the U.S.? And isn't it time? That's the question that resonates right there, Stephen, and we hear it. But let me ask you, is there any price that would be too high, or is it just a point of principle the United States should be absolutely firm on?
Well, shouldn't we have some principles?
Of course we do.
Shouldn't we?
Should, yeah.
Yeah. And, I remember sitting at a kitchen table at my mother's house talking to my aunt, and she told me about this horrendous genocide. She talked about the women and children and pregnant women being massacred in the streets. This is fact.
Stephen, we've got the picture and the question that hovers right there. Isn't it time, almost a century later? And we thank you for your call. Let me get one more from Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Bruce, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Great comments by your previous caller there, Stephen. And I don't want to minimize, what he said at all. It's obviously a tragedy, and it was terrible. Something that happened 90 years ago. And I heard all the comments by Nancy Pelosi yesterday, and there's never a good time to bring this thing up. But I think you have to look at the bigger picture of, I mean, we're right now in the middle of a war that, I mean, 70% of the American people don't want. And I don't know why we have to complicate it now with this. And I guess it would be also a question for you. I would like to know, I mean, who introduced this resolution? Was it recent, or has it been just been going on for years and years? And those are my only comments.
It's been around for a long time. But, Bruce, thank you very much for your call, and we'll turn to that and a lot more. We're talking about the nitty-gritty of the fallout if the U.S. and Turkey fall out over the Armenian Genocide Resolution. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Stephen Cook, can you give us just a little bit of the history of this? Nancy Pelosi has been reciting lately how often this has come up and gone nowhere in Washington. This is not a new push, but why has it made it so far this time?
Well, this isn't a new push by any stretch of the imagination, and she has gone through the history of it and the arguments that it's never a good time. I would say, though, that now is probably the worst possible time to do this. That's not to deny that an Armenian genocide took place and that this is an enormous tragedy. But as the second caller pointed out, we are in the middle of a war, and this is just complicating our efforts to prosecute this war successfully and ultimately bring our forces home. It is happening now largely because there's a Democratic majority in the House, and there are large concentrations of Armenian Americans located in important congressional districts. And Nancy Pelosi and the other sponsors of the resolution are committed to passing this resolution after years and years of it being not getting out of committee and so on and so forth. I was in Turkey the day after Election Day in 2006. Many Turks were unhappy and have been unhappy with the Bush administration. But when they found out that the Speaker of the House would be Nancy Pelosi, they almost had buyer's remorse because they understood that this meant the very strong possibility of an Armenian genocide resolution.
Stephen Larrabee in Tbilisi, Georgia, how far can Turkey go given its treaty obligations, let's say? Right now they give blanket clearance for military flights supporting U.S. operations in Iraq and Afghanistan. They're a NATO member. Can they shut off that blanket clearance? And what about access to the Incirlik Air Base? That's a NATO Air Force base, isn't it? Could Turkey really say, American Air Force, you're no longer welcome here?
Yes, but the mission in Iraq and is not a NATO mission, so they're doing this on a bilateral basis, and they have the right. It's a Turkish base. They have the right to decide, you know, who can use it and who cannot. If this were a NATO mission, it would be a different situation, but it's not.
So it's U.S. So they can really just put up the stop sign and say, all done. Stephen Cook, how far do you think Turkey would really go here?
Well, I think there's a strong possibility that the Turks are going to seek some tangible consequences for the Armenian Genocide Resolution. They may restrict our access to the airbase, restrict our access to the airspace. They're certainly not bluffing. Given the way the Turkish public has responded to this Armenian Genocide Resolution, the fact that the government is under suspicion by the very powerful Turkish military and secularist forces in the country, it's unlikely that they could do something merely symbolic. The government will have to respond in some way that demonstrates that the United States, that this resolution will have consequences. Now, it could also be the types of things where U.S. military contractors lose out on military projects. U.S. businesses do not get the same kind of treatment that they've gotten previously, and so on and so forth. So there's actually a range of things that the Turks can do. I certainly would not be so cavalier as to suggest that the Turks are bluffing on this issue, because Turkish domestic politics is demanding some sort of response from as a result of the resolution.
A lot on the table here. On the one hand, a terrible, terrible moment in history, and this was the location. On the other, right now, Turkey provides 19% of the food and water that Iraqis consume through Habur Gate there in eastern Turkey, 29% of the fuel used by Iraqi consumers, 25% of the fuel used by coalition forces comes in through Turkey. Stephen Larrabee in Tbilisi, Georgia, with the RAND Corporation. Stephen Cook at the Council on Foreign Relations in New York, please stand by. Listeners, you can join the conversation. What should be done here? How do you weigh history and logistics and strategy right now in this tough, tough case on Armenian genocide and U.S.-Turkey relations today? We're at 800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the nitty-gritty of an American fallout with Turkey if it comes over the Armenian Genocide Resolution, the potential military and strategic consequences of a broken relationship. There is a big, deep, and deeply felt debate here. It's gone on for years. People who feel very strongly that this killing needs to be recognized in this way and it needs to be now. There's a cost potentially there as well. What do you make of it all? We're at 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. We're joined today from Tbilisi, Georgia, by Stephen Larrabee, Distinguished Chair in European Security at the RAND Corporation, an expert on Turkey. And with us from New York, Stephen Cook, a fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations, expert on Turkish politics and U.S. Middle East relations. You can join us as well, 800-423-TALK. Bob is calling from Toronto. Hi, Bob. You're on the air.
Yes. Hi. This is really a fascinating discussion. I just wanted to say I was recently in Turkey during the midsummer elections, and I stayed on, and I found the country is terribly polarized between, on one hand, the rising Islamic influence and also the jittery nature of the military and the threat to secularism. So in this context, it's very volatile what's happening with northern Iraq and Turkey's neighbors. I just want to say that if this resolution goes through, it will probably push Turkey further towards Iran and possibly Russia. It's getting cozy with Iran. It's just recently signed a gas deal, which the U.S. objected to.
Mm-hmm.
The U.S. stands to lose a big arms client state, a big customer for its armaments, because Turkey has other places to do its business with. It signed a recent huge arms deal with South Korea. So that's one other way that Turkey can go if this resolution passes.
A lot of threads through this question. Let us pick those up, Bob, and thanks for that. I mean, yes, a customer, Turkey cut France off after it took its stand, but France did take a stand. What about the regional question? Stephen Larrabee, let me come first to you with that. Bob says his perspective is that Turkey will move closer to Iran if it falls out with the U.S. Can you see a glide path in that direction?
No, not really. I know what he means. I mean, economically, Turkey does quite a bit of its trade, gets about 25% of its energy from Iran, and that will continue. But politically, I don't think they'll move particularly towards Iran. They also get 65% of their natural gas from Russia, and there's been a very great increase in trade with Russia over the last decade. But in a general sense, what they're likely to do is pursue a much more multidimensional policy that rely less heavily on the United States, and relations with the United States will cool, and I think they'll be more involved in the Middle East in general, but I don't think they're particularly going to move towards Iran, but they would certainly keep and maintain strong economic trade with Iran. They need to the problem with Iran is that they need to diversify their sources of energy, particularly natural gas, in order to reduce their dependence on Russia, and Iran is one of the only sources of natural gas, so they don't have too much choice.
Stephen Cook, what about the other issue that Bob raises, which is the tension in Turkey between a secular impulse and a more Islamic, fundamentalist Islamic, in some cases, impulse? Does this argument, debate, heat factor into that dynamic in Turkey?
Well, I think this question of Islamism in Turkey and the clash with secularism is a bit overblown. The Justice and Development Party is hardly the Islamists of Hamas or Hezbollah or even Egypt's Muslim Brotherhood. This is a government that has done more to get Turkey into the European Union than any other government in previous history. And in fact, they've avoided many of the kind of hot-button Islamist issues that are on the agenda in Turkey. They want to live in a more modern, pluralist, democratic society. It's their secular opponents, like the Republican People's Party and the Nationalist People's Party, that are really anti-democratic. The Turkish military, given the context of Turkish politics and the historic nature of the secular republic that was founded by military officers in the early 20th century, is obviously concerned about creeping Islamization. But I don't really see that as much as a party that is trying to make Turkey more modern and more democratic. I think, though, that just to get to the caller's questions about the consequences of this resolution, I think there's something much more profound rather than just defense contractors and moving towards Iran, which I don't think would happen. But in terms of Turkish domestic politics, that is, the Armenian genocide issue was something that was under discussion. It was a small discussion. It was not widespread, but it was something that was beginning in Turkey. And of course, there were consequences to it, as we saw with Orhan Pamuk. But at the same time, the conversation was happening, and I believe that the genocide resolution is actually going to create a nationalist backlash that makes that type of public conversation impossible.
Interesting, interesting. Let's go to Reg, calling from Cedar Falls, Iowa. Hi, Reg. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thank you for calling, getting my phone. I would like to have a comment on two things. The first one is the Armenian genocide resolution. I strongly believe that this resolution must be taken away from the U.S. Congress and given to the historians. This is the historian's job and not the politician's. I mean, it's been like many, many years. Every year it comes to the Congress and it damages the Turkish-American relations. And right now is the most precise time. And first, it is basically have to be taken out from our issue.
Reg, let me ask you, do I hear a Turkish lilt in your accent there? Do you have a Turkish background yourself?
Yes, I'm American-Turkish, actually. I'm both American citizen. At the same time, my parents are originally from Turkey. So I follow the media over there very closely. Turkey is not bluffing this time. I mean, France did the same thing in terms of the Armenian, and they paid the cost so heavily. In fact, they are still paying. They lost $1 billion of the deals with the Turkey.
But, Reg, let me ask you, what if those congressmen have looked at the work historians have already done, after all, it's almost a century, and decided to their satisfaction, yes, indeed, this was genocide?
I mean, basically, I understand that it's going to be based on the vote, and I respect that. But on the other hand, the Armenian people, historically known as the most pious and the most humble when they live under the Ottoman Empire. Honestly, I mean, right now there are a lot of Armenian people, my original friends. I mean, great relations over there. But some reason when the France invaded Turkey during the World War I, 1915, and they basically exiled the Armenian and the Armenian people, more than 1 million expelled to go to another location. And on the way, it was a terrible winter. A lot of them died. I mean, the same thing today, the historians found a number of the mass murders done by the Armenian. Mm. So whatever Armenians are telling, let's look at the other side of the picture, the other side of the medallion. Yeah. Today there are hundreds of people, dead bodies are found with the Quran, with the Islamic scriptures next to them, burned and killed and tortured. So I really want my children and Armenian children to be good friends. I really don't want to fight anymore. I mean, Armenia has a border with Turkey.
Yeah.
This is the time to start the dialogue and friendship, not this resolution.
History can get very tangled in a hurry, but there are people who really want satisfaction on this front of calling it what it was. Reg, thank you very much for your thoughts and for your call. Stephen Larrabee in Tbilisi, Georgia. Stephen Cook in New York. Please stand by for just a moment. I want to welcome into our conversation from Washington Congressman Brad Sherman, Democrat, represents California's 27th district. He is a co-sponsor of the Armenian Resolution, serves on the Committee on Foreign Affairs, chairs the Subcommittee on Terrorism, Nonproliferation, and Trade, represents about 50,000 Armenian Americans in his district. Congressman Sherman, thank you very much for being with us.
Tom, I need to correct you. I do not represent 50,000 Armenians or anything close to that.
I stand corrected. Just reading off my notes here, but thank you, sir. We're talking this morning about the resolution and the possible fallout. You know, if it goes through and if the Turkish government makes good on its threats to cut off American access, to go into northern Iraq, what the cost of that would be. How do you weigh these things, Congressman?
Well, I think the French example brought up by the prior caller, we need to look at what really happened. That is the example that Turkey uses. They threatened France with a cutoff of trade, and in the following 5 years, France's exports to Turkey tripled. So this is a part of an ongoing process that the Turkish government has. They've threatened every country that has recognized the Armenia genocide.
So you think they're bluffing?
I think they're bluffing, but I think that if they choose to invade Cyprus, if they choose to invade northern Iraq, they'll figure out a way to blame the victims of the Armenian genocide. They're going to do what they're going to do. This resolution is not going to trigger anything, but if they can blame the Armenians for their behavior, they will.
You've got something like half a dozen former U.S. secretaries of state signing a letter saying, please don't pass this resolution. Are they all wrong?
Yes, and I think they all supported the war in Iraq as well. The establishment finds it easy to sweep things under the rug. The president of the United States said that the Armenians were subject to a genocidal campaign that commands all decent people to remember and acknowledge the facts. And so all we're doing in Congress is what the president said any decent person would do. All decent people are commanded to do. So it's a little odd to see him now criticizing us for doing that which in the past he has said every decent person would do.
The Pentagon reportedly making plans to reroute supplies through Jordan, through Kuwait, if Turkey closes its airspace to the U.S. Do you think they'll have to do that? Do you think it will be sufficient if they do?
If they have to do that, it will be because of the real action that's coming on Iraq and Turkey, and that is the 30 Turks that have been killed by PKK terrorists. It will not be because of this resolution. Keep in mind, we passed the exact same resolution 2 years ago, and nothing was said, nothing was done.
Passed it how far, Congressman?
We passed it through the committee.
Mm-hmm.
So we were 2 years ago today, we were exactly where we are today. And the reaction of Turkey was so slight, you didn't even know we passed the resolution. No one would have. The fact is that Turkey is supposed to be an ally of the United States. When has it become fashionable for friends to threaten friends?
Why do you think that's happened? Is the U.S. just losing standing, losing clout? Turkey feels free to say, you know, it's all going up in smoke if you take this step.
Well, I think the Bush administration has squandered the moral standing and authority and image and credibility of the United States. I think we squander it further when the president tells us not to vote on this resolution. I think the president is wise, however, to be awarding the Congressional Medal of Honor to the Dalai Lama today over the protests of China. So maybe that will do a little bit to restore our moral authority.
Congressman Brad Sherman of California's 27th District, a co-sponsor of the Armenian Genocide Resolution. Congressman, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Let's take a call from Washington, D.C. We have Bruce Fine on the line. Didn't expect to hear from you, Bruce, but here you are. You are, of course, a well-known constitutional law scholar, and I'm reading here a resident scholar at the Turkish Coalition of America. Is that right? What is that?
That is correct. It's a group that has opposed the Armenian Genocide Resolution. And I think the reason for opposition is nothing to do with the strategic importance of Turkey, but the historical facts. And although it's true a majority of historians at present subscribe to genocide, there's certainly respectable academics on the other side, like Bernard Lewis, and one in your own midst, Günter Louy, who has recently published a book, The Armenian Massacres in Ottoman Turkey, that demonstrate that there was not the general proof required of genocide, namely an attempt to exterminate because of nationality, religion, or otherwise. Mr. Lewis has written that basically it was Armenian revolt because they had a craving for secession and independence from the empire for long years.
When the Iranian leader spoke like that about the Holocaust and Jews in Europe, he was sort of hooted out of the country practically a month ago. Is it fair game, do you think, to raise those questions about this huge killing?
Listen, the question is whether there was genocide, not whether there are war crimes. There are other elements in international law that cover massacres, the Armenians committing the same against the Ottoman Muslims as well in the midst of a war, crimes against humanity. The actual genocide convention that applies says that persons charged are to have their accusations tested before the International Court of Justice, which has never been done. Bernard Lewis himself, we talk about free speech, was convicted of a crime in France because he did question the accuracy of the characterization of the Armenian events as genocide. That's not freedom of speech. That's not freedom of inquiry.
Yeah, Bruce Fein, our time is short. We appreciate your call, and there we're right back into it. And it's the conversation, of course, that Armenians who want this resolution passed really hate to hear, but there it is. Complicated. Stephen Cook, where do you think this is going? Some people say, well, the Turkish parliament can pass this resolution, green lighting an incursion into northern Iraq, but winter's coming on so fast, they're not going in there anyway. We'll have a time of testing, but we'll come out all right on the other side.
Well, I think that that's certainly possible, that what is going on with regard to this legislation in the Turkish Grand National Assembly is posturing on the part of the government and the Turkish military, each one trying to one-up the other given the fact that they are rivals in the domestic political arena. But at the same time, there's tremendous public pressure building in Turkey to do something about the PKK. So I think it's entirely possible that you will get that resolution. If the snows don't fall anytime soon and there is another terrorist outrage on the part of the PKK, I think it's more than likely that you'll see the Turkish military taking some sort of action in northern Iraq, which and it is, in fact, in all due respect to Congressman Sherman, this kind of cavalier attitude about the situation in Turkey come what may that concerns me that we are on a slide, as I said earlier, going from bad to ugly in U.S.-Turkish relations.
Mm. With that, I'm afraid we're out of time, but I want to thank you both. First you, Stephen Larrabee in Tbilisi, Georgia, with the RAND Corporation there. Mr. Larrabee, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you.
And Stephen Cook, a fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations, joining us today from New York. Stephen Cook, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you, Tom.
Listeners, you can continue the conversation and download the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.